Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody. Good morning and welcome to Talkify. This is Annie Lindstrom, your host of the show. Yeah, normally I slide that tune down a little bit more professionally. I'm trying some new techniques here and I got to work on them, I guess. Anyway, it's February 12th and it's cold where I live. It's probably cold where you live. So hope everybody's snuggled up to the radio, the podcast radio, and ready with a cup of coffee or something and ready to have a great time this hour. Talkupy is about people who do good things for community and make the world a better place. This is raw live radio, my friends, and we are seeking to hit a flow mark here as we go. So bear with us as we find our way. I can't see my guests. They can't see me. And we're trying to have a conversation so you can hang on with us through the hour. And we do want to take an hour so we can get to the meat of everything that's going on, or maybe the maybe not the meat for the vegans, we should say, the turnips. But anyway, please follow Talkupy on iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter at Talkupy_radio. Also, you can go to the website at Talkupy.net. It's talkupy.net, in case you are just listening and not looking. You can find my blog there, photos, videos, and show notes, as well as archives of more than, I think it's, we're getting up to 140 shows. Just looking back, I want to let everybody know to listen back to Jimmy Betts, who we had on Tuesday. He is a life artist and a climate activist. He doesn't like the word activist, but he's out there in that climate actions, really working hard and bringing his special take on things to the movements that are out there and trying to consolidate, help people see that it's all one movement with a bunch of people working all at the same time. We also had on recently Janet Donahue from Southern Illinois talking about how they're trying to frack the Shawnee National Forest, and that was a great show. Just really enjoyed getting back to Carbondale, where I went to school, and it was was lots of fun. And then we had Robin Mello on from Philadelphia. She was revisiting the show, and she's with Philadelphia Orchard Project now, and that was awesome. Check that out if you really want to be inspired. Robin totally inspires me. All my guests inspire me, but Robin, I remember her show from last year, or the last time she was on was like 2 years ago, and it still melts my heart. It was so beautiful, and so was the last one. If you do go to the website, and you should, please click on the contact tab to send me some listener mail. I'm always grateful for any feedback if you want to suggest any guests. Today we have in the special notes section of my blotter here, I have to give a warm congratulations to Talkupy guests Laura Steepleton and Alan Reisinger of Stop the Kaboom Festival. They had a beautiful baby boy yesterday, and there were pictures on Facebook, and I just can't stop crying about those photos. They were just so moving and beautiful. And just welcome to the world to their baby boy. I don't know if they've announced his name yet, but that's just fantastic news, and we're glad to share that with the Talkupy community. Before we begin, I want to thank Ronald Jenkins for his song, Disorganized Fun, which is the Talkupy theme song. And now we've been closing with music from Earth Guardians, my two-time guests here, Shuteskit and Itzcuatli Martinez, and they are performing in Denver, I believe, this weekend. So check them out on Earth Guardians on Facebook and on Twitter to see where that is going on. And if you're in the Denver area, go check them out for sure. So that's our announcements for this morning. I would like to welcome my guest for today, Beth Foster. She is co-director of the Mercy Junction Justice and Peace Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Good morning, Beth. How are you?
Good morning, Annie. I'm great. How are you?
Fabulous. And you are also a returning guest. We've been having a lot of go back and see what everybody's doing, and it's crazy, but I mean, you have interesting people on there. They just get more interesting as time passes, so you shouldn't just let them drop either way, is what I'm finding out. And Robin said, yeah, that was important to making community too. So I've been validated in my desire to go back and put people back on the air. And the last time we had you on, you were with Cleveland for No Kill City, and that was some work that you were doing there on behalf of the dogs and cats that go to the shelter in Cleveland, which is just near Tennessee, near Chattanooga. And and then since then you've changed jobs, but how is the No Kill City action going, and what you were doing before, and how did you kind of morph into this new role?
Cleveland for a No Kill City is going fantastic. We have not had animals killed in our community. I guess we're going on 3 years now, dogs and cats, because of the group that organized, and some fantastic people are part of that now, and I've gotten to step back a little bit and look at some new things, and they're doing fantastic, and everyone should check out their Facebook page and pick out a dog or cat. They'll get it home to you no matter where you are.
Yeah, definitely. And they can, and there's a hot link on Beth's name in the promo that goes right to that show. So right where I say Talk Your Pile on Beth Foster, if you click on that, you can listen back to that show. It was really great. As I recall, that was another great one. So that's good. The doggies and kitties are doing okay. And I know that you're doing a little fostering today. So
just a little bit. You may hear them in the background.
That's okay. We love animals. I think I used to talk. I don't know. Mine don't disrupt normally, but they do get into, like, I have cats that when they get their toys, they go, meow, meow, and they bring them all the way to across the room, you know, screaming about it, which is hysterical to me. And once one does it, everybody does it. So it's kind of funny.
Right.
But we haven't had much of that. It doesn't come through on this mic for some reason. Which is good. But anyway, so now I noticed that this was going on, and the next thing I noticed is that you, because I keep pretty good eye on Chattanooga, I want to give a big shout out to the Talkify fan club in Chattanooga. We have great, great people there, and there were so many people retweeting and posting this on Facebook. Just thanks to everybody and all the regular listeners, especially Ms. Ann Crisp. So I've got to give a shout out to her because I know she's
fantastic.
Yeah.
She also is a big animal person too. I love Ann.
Yeah, she's really supportive, and I appreciate her so much. And Damien and Chris and just everybody that's there and Susan, and just, it's just a big family that I still have to go home for. When I come, we're going to have a big family reunion. I think that's what's going to happen.
Absolutely.
So anyway, so tell me, so let's go. I mean, this, you just put the press release out about Mercy Junction Justice and Peace Center. How did that come into shape and being? I know it kind of sort of existed previously to this announcement, and how did you get involved in it?
Well, it was really through Occupy, the Occupy movement, Occupy Chattanooga. This pastor showed up at the Occupy Chattanooga meetings. His name was the Reverend Brian Merritt, and he had just moved to Chattanooga from D.C., where he had been the chaplain for the Occupy D.C. camp. And started coming to the Occupy Chattanooga meetings, and wasn't real sure about what he was up to, kind of checking him out a little bit. And so we ended up at a housing protest together, and it was a foreclosure action at a bank. And things were getting pretty tense, and Brian stepped up in his clerical collar and started talking to the banker and the police, and it really changed the dynamics of the protest, and got the banker to talk with the people. The banker identified himself as a Christian, and Brian read him some scriptures about, denying poor people housing. And it really changed the dynamics of what we were doing that day. And so I thought, maybe this guy's onto something. And he was starting a new worshiping community that was sponsored by the Presbytery of East Tennessee called Mercy Junction. So I kind of plugged into that, and then it sort of took over my life. and we did a lot of anti-foreclosure work. We've mm-hmm. done some animal rights work, some labor work, just across the board social justice work mm-hmm. as a ministry. And then we started talking about, you know, what is it we really feel like we need in this community. We have a great community of activists in Chattanooga, a lot of people doing a yes. lot of great work. But one of the things we repeatedly run into is we don't have a home. We don't have a place to have meetings. We don't have a place to make protest signs. We don't have a place to have trainings.
Mm-hmm.
We've done a justice school for the last 2 years through Chattanooga Organized for Action. That's just fantastic. Chris Brooks developed that and taught the first justice school, and I was one of the participants in that, and then I taught the next justice school, and it's an 8-week social justice training and action training, and just fantastic. But, you know, like, where are we going to have these things is always
right.
a huge time-consuming issue. So we started talking about needing some infrastructure to build the movement or to help the movement grow and move forward, and just to also continue to build that community where people have a place to go and just hang out and be with other people who think like them. So we started talking about this idea of a center. And
mm-hmm.
About the same time that we started talking about this idea and writing a proposal to the presbytery to fund it, this St. Andrew's building, which is an old Methodist church in Chattanooga that ceased to be a church about 10 years ago. It's this beautiful building. It's on the National Historic Registry. It's over 100 years old. The board that was operating it as a community center was looking for an organization to kind of take on that work for them.
Mm.
And all of these things happened right at the same time, and we were like, well, we would like to do that. You know, that answers our question about space.
Right. God will provide, right?
it just all was really amazing how it fell into place.
Yeah.
And they had already been doing some very similar work in the building
uh-huh.
as far as, like, there's a ministry there that works with children in Haiti as far as providing nutritional support. There's an LGBTQ-affirming church that meets there. There's a Spanish language congregation that meets there. Some arts, all that guard kind of arts things that are going on. So it was already kind of the place that we fit in anyway. And so we started talking with the board, and we have a property management agreement, and we are managing the center, which we are slowly bringing in other organizations and people who are doing social justice work. And we can provide them office space, we can provide meeting space, and so we have a contract for 6 years on the building, and
wow,
we moved in on
years.
January 1.
Yeah. That's a great commitment. So if I'm hearing you right, you're saying that the Presbyterian Church and the Methodist Church are sort of like getting together, which is kind of cool.
The St. Andrew's Center, yeah, and there's a lot of different, different churches that have been involved in it. The two of the churches that are there are Pentecostal churches. The LGBTQ mm-hmm. church is a Pentecostal church.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things we want to do. Is we've talked about that a lot in the
mm-hmm.
South, especially. You know, if
yes.
we can bring people of faith into this social justice work,
mm.
we've got. You know, we have the numbers, and, you know,
yeah.
traditionally that's where things have been able to take place and change has been able to happen with the civil rights movement was
right.
through the churches. So we really want to bring the faith community in and talk about
mm-hmm.
social justice and provide training and give people a way to really plug into the work.
Yeah, I think, you know, and it's not like the church gets a bad rap a lot of times, having, you know, a person that is a Christian and goes to church. I mean, I know about all the work that gets done inside church, and people just see the bad stuff, you know, because of Fox
yeah.
News and crazy extremists. You know, there's extremists in every, at every,
Absolutely.
In everything, and they always get the headlines, and there's so much work being done. You know, I got goosebumps when you said that, because I think, you know, if people realize, you know, the amount of people, you know, out there working every day, you know, on issues, and sometimes they are, you know, extreme right people, but they're still doing good things. They're still feeding people, and they're still doing things that, you know, may, like, good things, but they may speak things that are, you know, going against the grain and,
yeah.
and offend people. But, I mean, I think everybody does that. And I think maybe we'll come to grips with the fact that we're all human at some point,
yeah.
you know, but and that extremism is just basically, you know, unless it's like, I don't know, even extreme, like over the top love, you know, can be smothering and codependent. So, you know, it's like.
And we really hope, Annie, that we have an interface element to this too. I know we have a liberation seder that's being planned for Passover that's going to take place at the Justice and Peace Center, and lifting up different forms of oppression and talking about how we can find liberation from those as part of this. And we also want to emphasize that we are very welcoming and open to people who have no faith. You know, this is this is for everybody in the community who believes that social justice is important.
Well, yeah, and one thing that people, you know, I mean, I guess I would say from experience is that that's pretty much who the church is for, is the people with no faith.
Right.
That's the object, you know. It's like, okay, well, you're very welcome to come in, you know, and that's like where things get off the rails when that gets, you know, when that gets turned around, because it's just, it's crazy. It's not a club, you know, it's, and faith and spirituality are big topics, and people need to explore them. And I, you know, I always wish that there was more exploration going on in communities of faith, you know, about, you know, talking about doubts. And a lot of times, you know, you get in situations where people are willing to do that. And it sounds like, you know, you've hit gold there with, you know, with Brian Mirror, or should we say not gold? I'm using bad metaphors today.
Brian gold. Is fantastic.
It's rich soil. I'm going to call him rich soil instead of, you know, so I'm going from the turnip to the rich soil. But,
And part of what he does at the center is the worshiping community, and he does daily prayers at 12:30 each day, which is about 15 minutes, and he tries to really make that welcoming to people of all faiths. And then starting at the end of February on Saturdays, in conjunction with a free store at the center, he's going to be having the People's Sermon. And the People's Sermon is this very non-hierarchical method of having a service in which the people, you have your scripture and the people discuss it. And you know, and everybody preaches, basically, and tells what they take from it rather than have someone stand up front and tell you what it means. So we're really excited about that. Brian did a little bit of that last year, but this will be really getting it rolling starting in February.
Yeah, the sit and I forget what the word is, but, you know, that model is so like worn, and it's just so... it's patriarchal, and it's, you know, it's hierarchical, and I, you know, I'm a person of great faith, but I just, you know, I've lost interest in that model myself. And I think that's the kind of model that I've been looking for. You know, it's like, well, yeah, let's all just talk, you know, just have conversation. And that's why I do the show, so we can talk about things and pluck people out of the ether and hear more about what they have to say. And, you know, I had a guest on recently, his name is Damian Luzzo, and he's very involved in climate, and especially, you know, going up against oil and gas. And he said, you know, he was very, he went to the Utah tar sands action and, you know, really got schooled on white privilege, and was very humbled by what he learned. And, you know, he came away saying, you know, even if we have a compromise, you know, if we don't get climate fully done, you know, if we get climate fully done and we don't deal with social justice, then we're not even in a good place. He said, I'd rather have a little bit of, you know, a little bit of difficulty with climate and more social justice, you know, going forward. And when he said that, it was just like so powerful, because I was like, yeah, you're right. You know, that's really important.
Yeah.
And thinking about it too, with Brian, I mean, we've had all the stuff going on in Ferguson with, you know, there's been some differences with the clergy. Like it goes hot and cold between the protesters and the clergy. So is there that same kind of, do you guys face that same kind of thing right now? Or is it a matter of you being such a community that people kind of know better, or it's more integrated in terms of people, you know, knowing what you're up to and who Brian is better just because you're in a smaller community than a big city like New York or something?
Yeah, you know, as far as Brian's role, you know, everybody who is involved, I think, in activism or organizing in Chattanooga knows Brian at this point, and there's some trust there. But I think, too, what I've experienced more than anything are people who come into the center. And like you said, you know, the church does get a bad rap of being hateful and unwelcoming a lot of times from some of the things we see. And people who want to be part of the social justice work we're doing, but they're afraid, you know, like this is a church. And I've had several people say, look, you know, I'm not a Christian or I'm not into this church thing, but, you know, can we still do this here? And you know, just making sure that they understand, that's not who we are. We're not. And it was really interesting. We were kind of nervous with one of the congregations that was meeting at the center when we got ready to move in because we didn't know anything about them, and we were afraid you know, they were going to be one of those congregations that wasn't going to quite fit with our value system. And apparently they were having the same fears, you know, like, are these going to be these crazy conservatives who are going to kick us out? And that turned out to be the LGBTQ-affirming Pentecostal church, and we were just, like, all so relieved and like, oh, yeah, we're all so glad we're here together. So, you know, there's that real fear because the church has gotten that reputation out there of being hateful and unwelcoming to certain groups of people.
Well, it's funny because actually it seems like the, you know, I heard someone tell me the other day that the young people today, and he was a young person, saying that they're a generation of labels, that they're very much into labeling things. And, you know, and it's, even though they're very much wanting to, you know, have equality and all these other things, that there's a lot of labeling going on. And I was like, you know what? That's wild. Like, I never even thought of that. And it was coming, you know, out of the horse's mouth, you know, someone who was young and saying that's how it is. But I think we've just become a culture of, like we're just afraid to get to know each other and have differences and have differences of opinions. And I struggle with that so much, you know, myself, but I think that we struggle with that as a whole. And it seems like the story you're telling is that, you know, once we get to know each other, we can accept each other, you know, where we're at, you know, and we don't all have to think exactly the same thing.
God forbid. And we've struggled with that with the center, you know, like, how do we fit with people, you know, and there are some values that we have just decided we can't compromise on. One of the things we set was our equality statement. And we want, you know, we're asking that our building partners affirm that, especially as far as gender and sex and sexual orientation go, because those are the places we see discrimination in the church. We ask that our building partners will say that up to providing even, you know, the top levels of leadership and ordination, that these are open to women and LGBTQ folks. And that, that's one of the things we've said, you know, this is kind of our line in the sand. And we've talked about, you know, how do we work with people who don't do that, who don't affirm that, but may want to march with us on a housing issue or, you know, something like that. And we're struggling with that question.
Well, good. I mean, we should always be struggling at the borders, you know, if we're really doing what we're supposed to be doing. That's, after all, what all the prophets and, you know, and Jesus and the rabbis and everybody, they've always been trying to push, you know, and find out what is the truth, you know, where is the answer. And speaking of that, I did promise everyone who tuned in that we would talk about how you made the front page on Tuesday. I believe.
Well,
we
had a funeral.
Right? I know. Well, that's
Tuesday was when we did the funeral procession for the uninsured. And what we had going on in Tennessee is we have the counties. We're in Hamilton County as the county that the Justice and Peace Center in, and the neighboring county is Bradley County, which is where I live. And I believe the numbers, they weren't quite 20%. It was like 18-19% of people who live in those two counties are uninsured and don't have access to the federal health care exchange and those kinds of things because of the decisions of our state government. And so it was looking like we were going to have an option for 280,000 people in Tennessee to get health care. And, you know, we talk about health care, but look, really what we're talking about is they can't go to the doctor and get a wound treated. They can't get treatment for disease. You know, it's like a very real, tangible suffering when you don't have health insurance. So there was this plan that was presented in Sure Tennessee that was going to open this up to 280,000 more people, and seven state senators in committee decided that they would not accept the federal money that was going to pay for this, and they were going to deny these 280,000 people insurance.
And what was
really
interesting
about that.
What was their reasoning?
They've not really given a good answer. Too many moving parts to it. It really boiled down to partisanship, I think. Our funeral was called a political stunt, but I think really the political stunt was denying insurance to people who are going to die without it. So six of the senators who made that decision have insurance that's paid for by the state, which makes it even more interesting that they chose to deny this to the residents of the state.
Right.
So what we did is we literally wanted to drive home the point that because of this partisan decision, people are going to die, literally die. And so we held a funeral procession for the uninsured. We had a full casket. We had six pallbearers. Brian Merritt preached an amazing sermon. And we led the funeral procession. I think we probably had around 60 mourners who followed the casket. And everyone was dressed in black, and, you know, it was truly a funeral. And we carried the casket from Miller Park, which is about probably three blocks, down to the business office of the state senator who represents Hamilton and Bradley counties. And he is the vice president for wealth management at Morgan Stanley. So we had the funeral in front of his office, and it was really a really great action. We pulled it together in about 3 days and had dozens and dozens of people involved, and it just really it felt like the activist community in Chattanooga had just reached a new level in how fast we were able to organize this and how creative it was able to be and how many people plugged into it, and we did really amazing things to make it happen. We had the Grim Reaper following behind the mourners, and I think we really drove the point home. I saw a comment on Facebook that someone on the Hill had seen this happen and were really touched by it. And, you know, we really drove home, you know, the message that our loved ones, our friends, family members, and neighbors are going to die because the vice president of wealth management has denied them health insurance.
Yeah, nice juxtaposition there. Well, and I remember seeing your call for the casket on Facebook. Does anybody have a spare casket?
There was some interesting times with the casket, you know, driving it through the streets of Chattanooga, bungeed to a pickup truck, you know, some strange looks, but yeah.
Bungee. Well, you're down south, so everything bungeed. Everything is bungeed anyway.
Right.
So that wasn't the part that got everybody, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta. It's the South is such an interesting place. It's got its beauty and its weirdness too. But that's really great. And is there an archive of Brian's sermon that's someplace for people there where they can see it, or
he may have posted it on the blog. I'm not sure if he has done that yet or not, and I will check as soon as we hang up, Annie, and I will send you a link to that.
You need to put that up on your website, because that sounds like something
I think it was the most fantastic sermon I had ever heard.
Well, you know, it's funny because it seems like, you know, I don't even know if Reverend Billy's a Christian, but it seems like you've got your own Reverend Billy down there, too.
Yeah.
Those two guys got to meet, but... But that would be pretty powerful. But, so the 19%, that seems extremely low to me. I would think it would be much higher, but that's still a lot of people. I wonder what, I know we're in the same space here in Florida. I mean, God bless a friend of mine who turned me on to a doctor who sees people for, you know, relatively... you know, just some dollars, you know, I mean, you've got to give him some dollars, but it's like cash and he sees you and it's, you know, it's taken care of. So I have someone I can go see, but I wouldn't have had that if my friend hadn't told me, you know, and I can't afford, I mean, when I try to do the numbers on the Obamacare or ACA, whatever you want to call it, I mean, they don't work out for me. Like, I just can't make them work in terms of, like, you know, the amount of money I'm going to have to come up with if I get sick, if I pay the lowest thing.
And
it's like, why would I even bother, you know?
And you were the kind of person who was going to be covered in this, Annie, because it was for people who are self-employed. It was for people in this gap, people who are making minimum wage. There were, I believe it was 17,000 veterans that were going to be covered, you know? So, and one of the reasons I felt so passionately about this is I was without insurance for 4 years when I was self-employed. And I was making enough money to pay the bills. You know, I had a plan, but then I got really sick and had lots and lots of medical bills and almost lost my house and did end up in bankruptcy because of medical bills. And, you know, that's why my tax dollars were going to insure the state senator who's denying coverage to others.
Meanwhile.
So.
Yeah, exactly. And then, I mean, there's this whole thing now about being covered. But do you really get care? I mean, coverage does not equal care. And that's another, you know, where I'm getting down to. And I'm thinking that, you know, it's nice that you guys came out of the gate basically, you know, gnawing at root causes, you know, like the root cause, you know, of, you know, there's homelessness, there's sickness, there's illness and all these other things. And, you know, the root cause is that there's that people aren't being cared for. You know, and they're being like kicked off, like right now with the Social Security debates going on and saying, well, you know, all these disabled people are faking it, you know, and it's like, what? You know, I don't think
so.
And they need to not get any kind of help. I mean, and I used to sell insurance, so I know what that's, I know what it's like when people have a stroke or, you know, have any kind of, you know, thing that happens to them or one of their kids. You know, it's just, you need all the support and help you can get, and you didn't necessarily cause that, you know, or you get in a debilitating, you know, accident, or you're, you know, you're disabled in one way or another, and they want to kick people off. They want to go against the, you know, the marginalized people. I mean, the people on the edges right now are like, it's almost like, you know, sport hunting or whatever. I mean, it's disgusting.
Right.
So,
yeah, and, you know, it really does boil down to just an economic justice issue. And, you know, and those who have, their lives are more valuable than those who don't have as much, you know.
Where did that ever come from? I mean, that comes from, like, that basically, in my history books, that comes from aristocracy, you know, and that's like, you know, all the things that these, that the people who are enforcing it are basically saying they're against, but it's like, they're exactly what, you know, they're it's, and enlightening them. I mean, how do you feel about this? Cause I mean, I think it's coming up more and more, you know, where should we push and where should we build around? Like a funeral, you know, a procession, a march. And you guys, by the way, you had some great art in there. And, you know, that banner that you had, that was what actually made the front page.
That was Damien Crisp.
There you go.
He made those banners for us.
How did I know? Go DC, man. It was just so powerful. And I think Chris Artell was the one taking the pictures, too. So you just had, you guys had everybody there. Everybody was in on that. So that was really fantastic. But, you know, to me, the more art you put in it, the more it becomes less of a pushback and more of a, a place to open a conversation. Do you think you hit that? Do you think that you struck that balance with this action as opposed to just pushing back? Because there was pushback in there, too. It's kind of like it was a nice mix of everything.
I think it enabled conversation in a way that just your traditional march and chanting and yelling maybe doesn't, which I think there's definitely the place for that too. But it was some street theater, and that's telling the story in a way that people will listen to a story. I think that's what we did, is we really told the story of what this really means, and we took it outside of, you know, government and numbers and, you know, the dry details, and said, this is really the story. This is what's going to happen. People are going to die, and we're going to show you what that means with a funeral procession. And we talked about that, too, at the center, because we are Megan Hollenbeck, who is a fantastic artist and performer in Chattanooga, and who's also on the board of Chattanooga Organized for Action, their arts program director at the Justice and Peace Center. And Megan and I had a long conversation yesterday afternoon about what does it mean as far as the arts and social justice and how we weave this together, and you know, using it to tell those stories and letting people create, too, you know, to express these things that come out of the desire for justice and the despair that we feel sometimes, you know, around change not happening as fast as we want, and what does it mean to have an arts program as part of a social justice program. So we're really talking about that too, and making creativity a part of it.
Yeah, because it just seems like that you had a nice mix of everything in there, like just the right amount of like, okay, we're going to go to the Morgan Stanley guy's house, but we're going to have all this great art, and it's going to be, you know, and then we're going to throw in a sermon. You know, it's just like, whoa, that's like a lot of things for people.
I think it was Chris Brooks who said we had church in the best kind of way there on the sidewalk in front of Morgan Stanley.
Amen. Well, that is church, you know, that's what people don't realize. That's what it is. So, you know, even the people inside sometimes don't realize that. So you guys are really doing a favor to the church for doing things like that. But yeah, Chris, right on. Now, are you guys struggling with, like, what about the diversity there? I mean, it's the South is such an interesting place. And I think that, you know, one of the things that came out of some of the actions that, one action we did here was just this lack of, you know, intersectionality, you know, in terms of diverse people, like getting together and having, it all boils down to space in a way.
Yeah.
Because there's really no space anywhere for people to meet and talk. And that's by design, you know. And once you get a place to, you know, in the 60s, when I was growing up, you know, once there was a place to meet and talk, you know, sometimes they would bomb you, you know, and make sure.
One of the things,
mic them
and
all these other crazy stuff. You guys are up against it by creating space like that. I mean, that's going to be a struggle in some ways.
One of the things that's really cool at the center, Annie, the neighborhood we're in is, I believe the number is around 70% first generation immigrants. And it's a large Guatemalan population.
All right.
And so, you know, we've talked a lot about what does it mean for us to come into this community. And so one of the things that was really fantastic right off the bat is that there is a large Guatemalan congregation that meets in the center. And so, you know, we're having conversation about, you know, what does this community want the center to be, and you know, what do we do to make the center theirs and to make it meet what they want it to meet. And on Saturday night, we had our first real event at the center, and we just called it, was just a friendraiser, and it was supposed to be our closest friends and allies, and we ended up with 150 people there, which was really, really fantastic.
Wow.
And the program was in Spanish and English, and
sweet.
The people who attended, it was about half English speakers and half Spanish speakers, and we're trying to be really cognizant of language justice, and the staff of Mercy Junction, we are all starting Spanish classes on Tuesday.
Muy bueno.
So that,
that's good.
But, you know, we're really trying to think about that too, you know, like, and so it's given us a great opportunity to bring, you know, two communities together there, or multiple communities there, and have everybody in the same building together and to talk about what does social justice really look like when we're all in the room together.
You know, it's amazing because all these like groups that have been kind of like sitting on the wayside since 2011, you know, are starting, it's like, it's everything's starting to rise up, you know, the yeast is starting to have its effect. And we don't hear a lot about the immigrant community being included, you know, in these things, unless it's about immigration. And it's not just about immigration, you know, it's about living and struggling from day to day and being, you know, marginalized and basically, you know, oppressed and abused.
Right.
You know, you may not, everybody may need immigration reform, but in the meantime, you know, just getting through the day without being treated so poorly, you know, you know, as a community from a place like Guatemala, which is, you know, you're between, it's a very difficult place, you know, to be here and be oppressed or go back home or go back to your home country of your parents or, you know, whatever that is. And, you know, like the kids that are getting born here and they, you know, they're not really citizens and they're not really, they're kind of like Palestinians in a way. They have no country, you know, they have no place to be. But it's nice that you have, you know, a group that's, you know, kind of the same nationality and the same experience. They must be a very strong community to work with in that sense.
And, you know, a part of it, too, you know, so many of those conversations, like you said, are just around immigration when people in social justice come together. And, you know, I think part of it, too, is just saying, hey, these are our neighbors, and we need to build relationships and friendships. And, and how do we live together in a community? And that's what I think we really hope to do there, too, is to just get to know each other and see how we can support each other and be neighbors.
Right, and just see each other as equals. And I was talking to a past guest, also Ayeli Hunt, and we were talking about Black Lives Matter and how important that's been. But that at the end of the day, which I hate that phrase, but I'm going to use it here. It's all about equality. We have to realize that we're all being oppressed, and the more we get basically splintered off into justifiable resentments or justifiable causes, we just get more splintered as opposed to more unified. And, are you guys struggling with that or discussing that, how to kind of, be more loving as opposed to, take up the sword against this or that and actually, in the process, create some more divisiveness where there may not have been some in the past? Does that make sense?
I think so. And trying to think about how to respond to that.
That's all right. I come up with a doozy every show. What I'm just saying is, it's like we all have reasons to be upset for our, like, I'm not insured. I'm a woman. I'm a older, now I'm getting into, to be, not senior yet. But I mean, it's like, I've got all these places where I can stand and be, upset justifiably, about where I'm at. And so can people, who've been oppressed and under slavery for years and years and caused by white privilege.
Okay.
But where do we get together as opposed to, like, how do we stop fighting and start getting together into that mean ball of fish that's going to be hard to chew at, when the shark's coming after us?
I'm sorry, Annie. I have a cat fight. After I told you my cats never fight, we have a cat fight breaking out in the middle of the
show
in here.
All right, cat fight. Woohoo, cat fight. Yeah.
Now that you say that, I think I know I'm clearer about what you're talking about, And that's one of the things we've been very deliberate about at Mercy Junction is talking about intersectionality and, how – And we worked, Brian went to Ferguson and was really involved in Black Lives Matter. My background comes from the animal rights movement, which I keep pushing out there as if, this is really the social justice work. And but talking about, the intersections and all of these oftentimes go back to the same cause. It's that same thing that creates it. And being aware of that while we may be fighting on this front right now, it's really at the root of this thing that is causing all of this, and how do we change that?
Right. And to me, I've been thinking recently, and I don't know if I've said it before, but that, the one when they were asking Occupy, what's your one demand? And I remember one day on Twitter, I just said, you know what? Our one demand was justice. Our one demand was real justice, because at the bottom, and you said that you guys had flipped it, your title, Mercy Justice, which would have been easier to say Peace and Justice Center, which people are going to say that a lot, I'm sure. But you flipped it to say Justice and Peace Center. Why don't you talk about that? Because I really do believe that is our one demand. We want justice,
That was Brian Merritt's idea. He was the first one to suggest it. And then when he said it, everybody was like, yeah, you're right. And I think it is that we're we saw this with Black Lives Matter, peaceful protest and, pushing back on that idea of peace. But there can't be peace until people have justice, and we've got to have justice. And in creating justice, we create a world where peace is possible. So we wanted to put justice first, and we want there to be peace, and we work for peace. And we have everything that we do is nonviolent and peaceful protest and things like that. But we can't really say we have peace until we have had justice.
And then, the other thing that comes to mind, though, is we're asking for justice from a broken system. And this is where I get into the building around part. I mean, if we can't, and do we have justice amongst ourselves and our groups? And, and a lot of times, up in Zuccotti Park, the meltdown towards the end, I wasn't there, but I mean, of course, all the stories coming about, about the north end and the south end or the east and the west end, and just, things becoming unequal. And I think that, if we have a space to to practice among ourselves and build around and get a feeling for what that actually is. I think people clamor for it, and sometimes they're not just in their own lives. I know I'm not.
And
you know what I mean?
Yeah, and we've had a lot of conversation about that with the center, and we said, you know, one of our goals is to create this as a microcosm of how the world should be.
Right.
And we've already struggled through some issues as far as equal pay, sexism, you know, and addressing some of those things internally. Because, you know, one of the standards we set is that nobody's going to be paid less than $15 an hour because we've been paid, we've been part of that, you know, $15 an hour thought. We wanted
to
make sure that our part-time people had access to health insurance. You know, and like, how can we fight for these things in the larger world if we can't create them internally? And not to say that we don't do things wrong. And, but, you know, we're trying to be very aware of when we're not living up internally to what we want externally.
Yeah, there's a great Todd Rundgren song that goes, I want to change the world, I want to make it well. How can I change the world when I can't change myself? Try again tomorrow, try again tomorrow. And that's on Second Wind, if anybody wants to hear it. It's really good. But, you know, that song, I remember actually hearing it at Stone Mountain, Georgia. they were playing on the sound system, and I went up by the speakers, and I was, like, dancing to this amazing song. And it just, like, it never left. It just was like it was a drop into my life, and I realized, it's like it starts with me. And so I'm going to have to play that at some point. I don't know if I'm allowed to do that, but maybe Todd would let me. He's in Hawaii having a good life now, I think. So anyway, but yeah, it starts with ourselves, and I think, you know, you guys are providing – you know, let's talk again about the public space, too. You know, it's so precious. I wonder how you're going to balance, how you're going to keep it. Just how are you going to offer that? That's just like more valuable than gold, you know, right now.
You know, what we have a lot of space right now, but it's actually filling up more quickly than we ever anticipated. There is some shared space, which are like shared meeting rooms, and there's the old church fellowship hall. We have a giant, beautiful, amazing old sanctuary with stained glass. And we're going to keep those as shared spaces. And basically the way it works is our building partners just make a reservation and say, hey, Chattanooga Organized for Action is using the chapel on Thursday night at 6 o'clock or, you know, that kind of thing. And then building partners, we've tried to, you know, part of it is always, unfortunately, about we have to pay the bills, too.
Yeah.
And we have received tremendous support from the Presbytery of East Tennessee. I want to give a shout-out to PCUSA and the Presbytery of East Tennessee because that's what has made all of this possible, really. And then we also have the Presbyterian Peace Fellowship, which has been doing just some really amazing work for a long time. Starting, you know, with the Vietnam War, I think even before Vietnam, in protesting wars and violence. And they are one of our grantors and have been very supportive. But still, you know, like these organizations and ministries, the denomination, we have to find our own financial sustainability at some point. And part of it is with our building partners. And we've set up different levels because we don't want anybody to not be able to be part of it because of money. But those organizations that can pay a certain amount of rent, and then we have another level, and then we have it down, you know, where it's just volunteer hours because we have work to do in addition to needing money. And so our building partners contribute in that way, and then they get private office space, and they have access to internet and all of those kinds of things. And then what we're really trying to do with the building partners, we're going to start having building assembly meetings. And so we're going to have our first one in February. And what we really hope that to be is kind of a cooperative, consensus-based decision-making about the big decisions around the building. Like, you know, we need a little more money. Should we raise everybody's rent 10%, or do we want to hold a big fundraiser? Or, you know, COA is going to be doing this event. How can we support them? And, like, how can we support each other? How can we make this work together as a community? So that's what we really hope to do.
And that's where kind of the rubber hits the road. You know, do you turn into a management company, or do you continue somehow – to, you know, do you manage to create new, like, ideas and new ways of dealing with those issues, you know, that aren't the same old things that get everybody stuck, you know? And I wish you guys
we've tried to think about that, you know, with every step along the way, you know, just because you've always filled out this form, do we want to fill out this form or do we think this doesn't fit our value system? And, you know, that's the opportunity in creating something new is you can challenge those old ways and say, yeah, you know what, we're not going to do this. We're going to do it a different way.
Oh, please. We need more of this. We need more of this. If you're listening to this show and you are like vibrating and just like, I wish I was on the show because I could talk about it, please call me because I think there's more of this going on than we know about, you know. And it's just something that is, I want to see people, you know, pushing those boundaries and trying new things. It's like we get stuck. We're so stuck. You know, and we're yelling at people saying, you're stuck, when we're stuck ourselves. You know, we're not willing to go into those new spaces and create new ways of dealing with things. You know, we're getting down here to the last 10 minutes, but before we close out and talk about your Indiegogo, I want to talk about two things. One, I want to ask you, when is the Justice School? When is Chris's Justice School? When does that take place? Do you know what time of year? Is there one coming up?
We don't have one scheduled right now. We are working on some ideas around that. We're probably going to be doing something in the summer for sure. And then we're also looking at developing some kind of justice school for middle schoolers. I was just reading this morning about the radical brownies in Oakland, which was so super cool.
And we're reading about what? What did you just say?
The radical brownies. It's like the brownie group, but they're the brownies. Awesome. Instead of baking cookies, they're doing social justice. They're doing social justice education and actions, and it just sounded super cool. Okay. So,
or that's they need to be on Talkify. That's for sure.
Yes, they do. Yeah, I shared the link on my Facebook, Annie. Check it out. I'll definitely want to hear them talk on. So, but we will be doing some type of justice school this summer.
Okay,
but we don't have a definite schedule yet.
And now, as far as like you did say that you're basically trying to do is provide infrastructure to existing organizations and support. So, is that just a way of like bringing more people together, like in a place where there's a safe space? You know, it's like safe and it's where people can mix and get to know each other and maybe see, you know, well, we're all sort of working on the same thing, sort of.
Yeah. And so much of, you know, there have been these great ideas, but it's like, well, where are we going to do that? And where are we going to meet? And where are we going to store things? And, you know, that infrastructure and then the infrastructure of, there's a lot of groups out there who want to do work, but, you know, just basic how to canvas. Damien's going to do some how to make protest art classes. We talked about that yesterday, like the training infrastructure and then a space for events and a space for meetings and a space for storage and all of those things. And one of the things I wanted to say, Annie, I know we're getting close on time, is that I think a lot of us invested so much in the Occupy movement. I mean, sometimes I look back on and I'm just like, oh, it's so sad we accomplished nothing. For me, when I look back on it now, like all of this that's happening right now, that's because of Occupy. And there were some rough times and we did a lot of things wrong. But I think sometimes our mistakes are what produce the most beautiful things. And I think that's what I see now out of Occupy is, we were learning, we were finding our way, and we were finding each other.
Right.
But this is what can come out of that.
I was talking about that the other day. I mean, it's like saying, well, you don't have your kid anymore because it's not, you know, a baby. And your kid grows to be a toddler. Your kid grows to be, you know, a middle schooler. And then your kid grows to be, you know, a teenager and then an adult. So we're now, you know, everything's growing up. This show is Occupy. You know, there's so much going on. People fighting against the Boston Olympics is from straight out. I mean, it's straight out of Occupy, I guess.
So
we could do a parody about that.
And I talked to my former Occupy buddies, and, you know, there's a lot of sometimes just despair that we didn't, you know, capitalism with the camps, but
that's
so much has been born of it, and that I think we have to recognize that.
I think community was created, and you know, I gotta tip my hat to Rector Michael Stiffen, and Brooklyn too, because you know he opened up his church. You know, like space became available when space is needed.
Yeah.
It can become available, and I think that was the very first example of that, you know, and it was accepting to everybody, and the congregation moved over and said, go ahead, you know, and that was a that was a huge, huge thing. And it was an example of what is possible, I think. And, you know, it doesn't have to be long-term. It can be short-term. It doesn't have to be disaster. I mean, maybe by example, people could pick up. You guys should bring him down to talk because he's got a lot of good things to say.
That would be fantastic.
The show I did with him was just absolutely fantastic. You know, and the Episcopal Church, you know, people would say, oh, well, they're just sexist and horrid, you know, and they split over it. But, I mean, dude, they came through, and they come through a lot up there. They do a lot for homelessness, too, right there next to the Waldorf Astoria, which people aren't aware of. But I will say that's probably one of the shows that I wish was listened to a lot more. But you all should get in touch with Michael.
I want to check that one out. I haven't listened to it.
He is fantastic and brings that heart and that light, you know, that I think that, you know, doing something different and new in the face of, like, okay, well, maybe some people aren't going to like this, you know. But, you know, that's a space that's been explored and is, that you guys are proving is continuing to be explored. So, and in order to do that, I know that you are looking for support. And support can come in a lot of ways. It can come in forms of money. It can come in form of just people helping you get the word out. You know, or sharing that. But you told me at the beginning of the show that you have an Indiegogo campaign up. You want to talk about that and how people can connect to that and what you're trying to raise?
Sure.
Time frames?
It's our first real fundraising effort, and we did, you know, we have inherited or been given or loaned this amazing old historical church. But, you know, with a big old historical building comes lots of expense. And so we set out, I think, a pretty modest goal for our first crowdfunding campaign. We're trying to raise $3,000, and we're about halfway there with our Indiegogo, and I think we have about a month left on it. And we got a lot of attention out of the gate and a lot of donations, but, you know, it's kind of tapered off now. So we have a link up on our Facebook, and I'll share it out again when we get off the telephone. But if folks would check that out, and I know, you know, if you can't give, just share it. That helps a lot, just getting the word out and you know, helping us raise the money to make the movement happen.
Well, are you going to also have a list of things that you want, like equipment or some kind of, like, where people could contribute? Like, I'm a writer, so I could contribute writing to you, you know, as
that
opposed to
that is a great idea.
Money. Yeah, because I think, you know, there's always...
You know, we always do the wish list at the animal shelter, but I hadn't thought about it for the center. Of course we need that. That's great, Annie.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, we do a lot of... I'm into a lot of time banking stuff that goes on here. I am not in one just yet because I'm not going to... you know, near enough to one, but, you know, being able to, like, realize that there's a lot of things of value that are not money.
That's
you
a
know,
fantastic idea.
People can provide you services, you know, maybe come and do childcare or, you know, things like that, you know, that are worth a ton of money, but, you know, you couldn't get it on the Indiegogo. Nobody could write you a check for that. So, you know,
Damien
did the
fantastic. I'm going to create
poster,
that.
Vacuum cleaners, actually, I was thinking that vacuuming is the hardest thing. It's my least favorite.
Especially when you have lots of animals.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, oh, I have to do it. I was like, nah, I'll just do it tomorrow. Finally you break down and you do it. I don't know how we're ending this on vacuuming, but obviously what you're doing is you're not ending up in a vacuum at all. And you've got a lot going on, and I just wish you guys the best, and you're always welcome to come on the show. I would definitely love to have Brian on if he would like to come on. And you guys may need to touch base with those radical brownies. They'll get you the last of that $3,000.
Yeah, that was just really cool. And I will connect you and Brian, and he would be a great guest for the show.
Send them out into the streets. All right. Well, Beth, it's always awesome to talk to you. And
it was
so
fantastic. Thank you.
I have so much love and heart for Chattanooga, and I swear, now you're just, everybody's pulling me. It's hard doing this show because every time I do a show, I just want to run away to the place of the people I'm talking, but Chattanooga just has you guys, now you've really got my number. you know, church with
people. We need
to hear,
Annie.
not up front, people not up front in the church. Well, you know, I heard Stephen Jenkinson talk the other day, and he did the show, the movie Grief Walker. And he said, you know, I feel called to a lot of places, but I think maybe I'm supposed to be where I'm supposed to be because there isn't anyone like, you know, there aren't that many people like me here. So I don't need to always go and be around the people that are like me. But but so at least a visit. But, you know, damn, it's crazy. I just love you, Chattanooga. I love you all. And I can't wait to meet you all face to face. You're just my home group, my best people. And
we love you, too.
We'll have more on. All right, well, have a great day, Beth, and we'll be in touch.
All right, Annie. Thank you so much.
All right, bye, honey. So bye, honey. That was Beth. And you can tell my heart is melting. I'm just so in love with my Chattanooga people and all the people out there that are doing great things. This is why I do my show. I hope it means something to you. It means a lot to me to be able to talk to these people who are out there doing and just, you know, being. I mean, not doing, just being. Being who they really are, letting who they really are come through and living it in spite of the odds. Because believe it or not, all these people I talk to, they're not all rich and they're not all of means, and they make sacrifices to be who they are. And we're going to end with Earth Guardians. Same thing. So young kids, they've given up their lives to change the world and be the change themselves. So let's close with them and just think about what's going on in Chattanooga. And if you're interested, get in touch with me. I'll get you in touch with Beth, and we'll build this up. Everybody have a good day, and I don't know what the next show is, but it'll be just as awesome as this one, I think. Won't be Chattanooga, though. Well, it might be. Anyway, everybody have a great day. It's time to be the change, and you're not as